This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents AI Superpowers, China, Silicon Valley, and the New World Order by Kai-Fu Lee. Performed by Michael Naramore. Introduction. One of the obligations that comes with my work as a venture capitalist, VC investor, is that I often give speeches about artificial intelligence, AI, to members of the global business and political elite. One of the joys of my work is that I sometimes get to talk about that very same topic with kindergartners. Surprisingly, these two distinctly different audiences often ask me the same kinds of questions. During a recent visit to a Beijing kindergarten, a gaggle of five-year-olds grilled me about our AI future. Are we going to have robot teachers? What if one robot car bumps into another robot car and then we get hurt? Will people marry robots and have babies with them? Are computers going to become so smart that they can boss us around? If robots do everything, then what are we going to do? These kindergartners' questions echoed queries posed by some of the world's most powerful people, and the interaction was revealing in several ways. First, it spoke to how AI has leapt to the forefront of our minds. Just a few years ago, artificial intelligence was a field that lived primarily in academic research labs and science fiction films. The average person may have had some sense that AI was about building robots that could think like people, but there was almost no connection between that prospect and our everyday lives. Today, all of that has changed. Articles on the latest AI innovations blanket the pages of our newspapers. Business conferences on leveraging AI to boost profits are happening nearly every day. And governments around the world are releasing their own national plans for harnessing the technology. AI is suddenly at the center of public discourse, and for good reason. Major theoretical breakthroughs in AI have finally yielded practical applications that are poised to change our lives. AI already powers many of our favorite apps and websites, and in the coming years, AI will be driving our cars, managing our portfolios, manufacturing much of what we buy, and potentially putting us out of our jobs. These uses are full of both promise and potential peril, and we must prepare ourselves for both. My dialogue with the kindergartners was also revealing because of where it took place. Not long ago, China lagged years, if not decades, behind the United States in artificial intelligence. But over the past 3 years, China has caught AI fever, experiencing a surge of excitement about the field that dwarfs even what we see in the rest of the world. Enthusiasm about AI has spilled over from the technology and business communities into government policymaking, and it has trickled all the way down to kindergarten classrooms in Beijing. This broad-based support for the field has both reflected and fed into China's growing strength in the field. Chinese AI companies and researchers have already made up enormous ground on their American counterparts, experimenting with innovative algorithms and business models that promise to revolutionize China's economy. Together, these businesses and scholars have turned China into a bona fide AI superpower, the only true national counterweight to the United States in this emerging technology. How these two countries choose to compete and cooperate in AI will have dramatic implications for global economics and governance. Finally, during my back and forth with those young students, I stumbled on a deeper truth. When it comes to understanding our AI future, we're all like those kindergartners. We're all full of questions without answers, trying to peer into the future with a mixture of childlike wonder and grown-up worries. We want to know what AI automation will mean for our jobs and for our sense of purpose. We want to know which people and countries will benefit from this tremendous technology. We wonder whether AI can vault us to lives of material abundance and whether there is space for humanity in a world run by intelligent machines. No one has a crystal ball that can reveal the answers to these questions for us, But that core uncertainty makes it all the more important that we ask these questions, and to the best of our abilities, explore the answers. This book is my attempt to do that. I'm no oracle who can perfectly predict our AI future, but in exploring these questions, I can bring my experience as an AI researcher, technology executive, and now venture capitalist investor in both China and the United States. My hope is that this book sheds some light on how we got here and also inspires new conversations about where we go from here. Part of why predicting the ending to our AI story is so difficult is because this isn't just a story about machines. It's also a story about human beings, people with free will that allows them to make their own choices and to shape their own destinies. Our AI future will be created by us, and it will reflect the choices we make and the actions we take. In that process, I hope we will look deep within ourselves and to each other for the values and wisdom that can guide us. In that spirit, let us begin this exploration. 1. China's Sputnik Moment. The Chinese teenager with the square-rimmed glasses seemed an unlikely hero to make humanity's last stand. Dressed in a black suit, white shirt, and black tie, Ke Jia slumped in his seat, rubbing his temples and puzzling over the problem in front of him. Normally filled with a confidence that bordered on cockiness, the 19-year-old squirmed in his leather chair. Change the venue, and he could be just another prep school kid agonizing over an insurmountable geometry proof. But on this May afternoon in 2017, he was locked in an all-out struggle against one of the world's most intelligent machines, AlphaGo, a powerhouse of artificial intelligence backed by arguably the world's top technology company, Google. The battlefield was a 19-by-19 lined board populated by little black and white stones, the raw materials of the deceptively complex game of Go. During gameplay, two players alternate placing stones on the board, attempting to encircle the opponent's stones. No human on Earth could do this better than Ke Jia. But today, he was pitted against a Go player on a level that no one had ever seen before. Believed to have been invented more than 2,500 years ago, Go's history extends further into the past than any board game still played today. In ancient China, Go represented one of the four art forms any Chinese scholar was expected to master. The game was believed to imbue its players with a Zen-like intellectual refinement and wisdom. Where games like Western chess were crudely tactical, the game of Go is based on a patient positioning and slow encirclement, which made it into an art form, a state of mind. The depth of Go's history is matched by the complexity of the game itself. The basic rules of gameplay can be laid out in just 9 sentences, but the number of possible positions on a Go board exceeds the number of atoms in the known universe. The complexity of the decision tree had turned defeating the world champion of Go into a kind of Mount Everest for the artificial intelligence community, a problem whose sheer size had rebuffed every attempt to conquer it. The poetically inclined said it couldn't be done because machines lacked the human element, an almost mystical feel for the game. The engineers simply thought the board offered too many possibilities for a computer to evaluate. But on this day, AlphaGo wasn't just beating Ke Jia. It was systematically dismantling him. Over the course of 3 marathon matches of more than 3 hours each, Ke had thrown everything he had at the computer program. He tested it with different approaches, conservative, aggressive, defensive, and unpredictable. Nothing seemed to work. AlphaGo gave Ke no openings. Instead, it slowly tightened its vise around him. The view from Beijing. What you saw in this match depended on where you watched it from. To some observers in the United States, AlphaGo's victories signaled not just the triumph of machine over man, but also of Western technology companies over the rest of the world. The previous 2 decades had seen Silicon Valley companies conquer world technology markets, Companies like Facebook and Google had become the go-to internet platforms for socializing and searching. In the process, they had steamrolled local startups in countries from France to Indonesia. These internet juggernauts had given the United States a dominance of the digital world that matched its military and economic power in the real world. With AlphaGo, a product of the British AI startup DeepMind, which had been acquired by Google in 2014, the West appeared poised to continue that dominance into the age of artificial intelligence. But looking out my office window during the Kajia match, I saw something far different. The headquarters of my venture capital fund is located in Beijing's Zhongguansun neighborhood, an area often referred to as the Silicon Valley of China. Today, Zhongguansun is the beating heart of China's AI movement. To people here, AlphaGo's victories were both a challenge and an inspiration. They turned into China's Sputnik moment for artificial intelligence. When the Soviet Union launched the first human-made satellite into orbit in October 1957, it had an instant and profound effect on the American psyche and government policy. The event sparked widespread U.S. public anxiety about perceived Soviet technological superiority, with Americans following the satellite across the night sky and tuning into Sputnik's radio transmissions. It triggered the creation of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, fueled major government subsidies for math and science education, and effectively launched the space race. That nationwide American mobilization bore fruit 12 years later when Neil Armstrong became the first person ever to set foot on the moon. AlphaGo scored its first high-profile victory in March 2016, during a 5-game series against the legendary Korean player Lee Zedol, winning 4-1. While barely noticed by most Americans, the 5 games drew more than 280 million Chinese viewers. Overnight, China plunged into an artificial intelligence fever. The buzz didn't quite rival America's reaction to Sputnik, but it lit a fire under the Chinese technology community that has been burning ever since. When Chinese investors, entrepreneurs, and government officials all focus in on one industry, they can truly shake the world. Indeed, China is ramping up AI investment, research, and entrepreneurship on a historic scale. Money for AI startups is pouring in from venture capitalists, tech juggernauts, and the Chinese government. Chinese students have caught AI fever as well, enrolling in advanced degree programs and streaming lectures from international researchers on their smartphones. Startup founders are furiously pivoting, re-engineering, or simply rebranding their companies to catch the AI wave. And less than 2 months after Kejia resigned his last game to AlphaGo, the Chinese central government issued an ambitious plan to build artificial intelligence capabilities. It called for greater funding, policy support, and national coordination for AI development. It set clear benchmarks for progress by 2020 and 2025, and it projected that by 2030, China would become the center of global innovation in artificial intelligence, leading in theory, technology, and application. By 2017, Chinese venture capital investors had already responded to that call, pouring record sums into artificial intelligence startups and making up 48% of all AI venture funding globally, surpassing the United States for the first time. A game and a game changer. Underlying that surge in Chinese government support is a new paradigm in the relationship between artificial intelligence and the economy. While the science of artificial intelligence made slow but steady progress for decades, only recently did progress rapidly accelerate, allowing these academic achievements to be translated into real-world use cases. The technical challenges of beating a human at the game of Go were already familiar to me. As a young PhD student researching artificial intelligence at Carnegie Mellon University, I studied under pioneer AI researcher Raj Reddy. In 1986, I created the first software program to defeat a member of the World Championship team for the game of Othello, a simplified version of Go played on an 8x8 square board. It was quite an accomplishment at the time, but the technology behind it wasn't ready to tackle anything but straightforward board games. The same held true when IBM's Deep Blue defeated world chess champion Garry Kasparov in a 1997 match dubbed The Brain's Last Stand. The event had spawned anxiety about when our robot overlords would launch their conquest of humankind. But other than boosting IBM's stock price, the match had no meaningful impact on life in the real world. Artificial intelligence still had few practical applications, and researchers had gone decades without making a truly fundamental breakthrough. Deep Blue had essentially brute-forced its way to victory, relying largely on hardware customized to rapidly generate and evaluate positions from each move. It had also required real-life chess champions to add guiding heuristics to the software. Yes, the win was an impressive feat of engineering, but it was based on long-established technology that worked only on very constrained sets of issues. Remove Deep Blue from the geometric simplicity of an 8x8 square chessboard, and it wouldn't seem very intelligent at all. In the end, the only job it was threatening to take was that of the world chess champion. This time, things are different. The Ker-Jaya vs. AlphaGo match was played within the constraints of a Go board, but it is intimately tied up with the dramatic changes in the real world. Those changes include the Chinese AI frenzy that AlphaGo's matches sparked amid the underlying technology that powered it to victory. AlphaGo runs on deep learning, a groundbreaking approach to artificial intelligence that has turbocharged the cognitive capabilities of machines. Deep learning-based programs can now do a better job than humans at identifying faces, recognizing speech, and issuing loans. For decades, the artificial intelligence revolution always looked to be 5 years away, but with the development of deep learning over the past few years, that revolution has finally arrived. It will usher in an era of massive productivity increases, but also widespread disruptions in labor markets, and profound socio-psychological effects on people, as artificial intelligence takes over human jobs across all sorts of industries. During the Ke-Jie match, it wasn't the AI-driven killer robots some prominent technologists warn of that frightened me. It was the real-world demons that could be conjured up by mass unemployment and the resulting social turmoil. The threat to jobs is coming far faster than most experts anticipated, and it will not discriminate by the color of one's collar, instead striking the highly trained and poorly educated alike. On the day of that remarkable match between AlphaGo and Ke-Jia, the deep learning was dethroning humankind's best Go player. That same job-eating technology is coming soon to a factory and an office near you. The ghost in the Go machine. But in that same match, I also saw a reason for hope. 2 hours and 51 minutes into the match, Ke-Jia had hit a wall. He'd given all that he could to this game, but he knew it wasn't going to be enough. Punched low over the board, he pursed his lips and his eyebrows began to twitch. Realizing he couldn't hold his emotions in any longer, he removed his glasses and used the back of his hand to wipe tears from both of his eyes. It happened in a flash, but the emotion behind it was visible for all to see. Those tears triggered an outpouring of sympathy and support for Ke. Over the course of these 3 matches, Ke had gone on a roller coaster of human emotion: confidence, anxiety, fear, hope, and heartbreak. It had showcased his competitive spirit, but I saw in those games an act of genuine love, a willingness to tangle with an unbeatable opponent out of pure love for the game, its history, and the people who play it. Those people who watched Ke's frustration responded in kind. AlphaGo may have been the winner, but Ke became the people's champion. In that connection, human beings giving and receiving love, I caught a glimpse of how humans will find work and meaning in the age of artificial intelligence. I believe that the skillful application of AI will be China's greatest opportunity to catch up with and possibly surpass the United States. But more important, this shift will create an opportunity for all people to rediscover what it is that makes us human. To understand why, we must first grasp the basics of the technology and how it is set to transform our world. A brief history of deep learning. Machine learning, the umbrella term for the field that includes deep learning, is a history-altering technology, but one that is lucky to have survived a tumultuous half-century of research. Ever since its inception, artificial intelligence has undergone a number of boom and bust cycles. Periods of great promise have been followed by AI winters, when a disappointing lack of practical results led to major cuts in funding. Understanding what makes the arrival of deep learning different requires a quick recap of how we got here. Back in the mid-1950s, the pioneers of artificial intelligence set themselves an impossibly lofty but well-defined mission: to recreate human intelligence in a machine. That striking combination of the clarity of the goal and the complexity of the task would draw in some of the greatest minds in the emerging field of computer science: Marvin Minsky, John McCarthy, and Herbert Simon. As a wide-eyed computer science undergrad at Columbia University in the early 1980s, all of this seized my imagination. I was born in Taiwan in the early 1960s, but moved to Tennessee at the age of 11 and finished middle and high school there. After 4 years at Columbia in New York, I knew that I wanted to dig deeper into AI. When applying for computer science PhD programs in 1983, I even wrote this somewhat grandiose description of the field in my statement of purpose: "Artificial intelligence is the elucidation of the human learning process, the quantification of the human thinking process, the explication of human behavior, and the understanding of what makes intelligence possible. It is men's final step to understand themselves, and I hope to take part in this new but promising science." That essay helped me get into the top-ranked computer science department of Carnegie Mellon University, a hotbed for cutting-edge AI research. It also displayed my naivete about the field, both overestimating our power to understand ourselves and underestimating the power of AI to produce superhuman intelligence in narrow spheres. By the time I began my PhD, the field of artificial intelligence had forked into two camps: the rule-based approach and the neural networks approach. Researchers in the rule-based camp, also sometimes called symbolic systems or expert systems, attempted to teach computers to think by encoding a series of logical rules: if X, then Y. This approach worked well for simple and well-defined games, toy problems, but fell apart when the universe of possible choices or moves expanded. To make the software more applicable to real-world problems, the rule-based camp tried interviewing experts in the problems being tackled and then coding their wisdom into the program's decision-making, hence the expert systems moniker. The neural networks camp, however, took a different approach. Instead of trying to teach the computer the rules that had been mastered by a human brain, these practitioners tried to reconstruct the human brain itself. Given that the tangled webs of neurons and animal brains were the only thing capable of intelligence as we knew it, these researchers figured they'd go straight to the source. This approach mimics the brain's underlying architecture, constructing layers of artificial neurons that can receive and transmit information in a structure akin to our networks of biological neurons. Unlike the rule-based approach, builders of neural networks generally do not give the networks rules to follow in making decisions. They simply feed lots and lots of examples of a given phenomenon, pictures, chess games, sounds, into the neural networks, and let the networks themselves identify patterns within the data. In other words, the less human interference, the better. Differences between the two approaches can be seen in how they might approach a simple problem: identifying whether there is a cat in a picture. The rule-based approach would attempt to lay down if-then rules to help the program make a decision. If there are two triangular shapes on top of a circular shape, Then there is probably a cat in the picture. The neural network approach would instead feed the program millions of sample photos labeled cat or no cat, letting the program figure out for itself what features in the millions of images were most closely correlated to the cat label. During the 1950s and 1960s, early versions of artificial neural networks yielded promising results and plenty of hype. But then, in 1969, researchers from the rule-based camp pushed back, convincing many in the field that neural networks were unreliable and limited in their use. The neural networks approach quickly went out of fashion, and AI plunged into one of its first winters during the 1970s. Over the subsequent decades, neural networks enjoyed brief stints of prominence, followed by near-total abandonment. In 1988, I used a technique akin to neural networks, hidden Markov models, to create Sphinx, the world's first speaker-independent program for recognizing continuous speech. That achievement landed me a profile in the New York Times, but it wasn't enough to save neural networks from once again falling out of favor as AI re-entered a prolonged ice age for most of the 1990s. What ultimately resuscitated the field of neural networks and sparked the AI renaissance we are living through today were changes to two of the key raw ingredients that neural networks feed on, along with one major technical breakthrough. Neural networks require large amounts of two things, computing power and data. The data trains the program to recognize patterns by giving it many examples, and the computing power lets the program parse those examples at high speeds. Both data and computing power were in short supply at the dawn of the field in the 1950s. But in the intervening decades, all that has changed. Today, your smartphone holds millions of times more processing power than the leading cutting-edge computers that NASA used to send Neil Armstrong to the moon in 1969. And the internet has led to an explosion of all kinds of digital data: text, images, videos, clicks, purchases, tweets, and so on. Taken together, all of this has given researchers copious amounts of rich data on which to train their networks, as well as plenty of cheap computing power for that training. But the networks themselves were still severely limited in what they could do. Accurate results to complex problems required many layers of artificial neurons, but researchers hadn't found a way to efficiently train those layers as they were added. Deep learning's big technical break finally arrived in the mid-2000s, when leading researcher Geoffrey Hinton discovered a way to efficiently train those new layers and neural networks. The result was like giving steroids to the old neural networks, multiplying their power to perform tasks such as speech and object recognition. Soon, these juiced-up neural networks, now rebranded as deep learning, could outperform older models at a variety of tasks. But years of ingrained prejudice against the neural network's approach led many AI researchers to overlook this fringe group that claimed outstanding results. The turning point came in 2012, when a neural network built by Hinton's team demolished the competition in an international computing vision contest. After decades spent on the margins of AI research, neural networks hit the mainstream overnight, this time in the form of deep learning. That breakthrough promised to thaw the ice from the latest AI winter, and for the first time truly bring AI's power to bear on a range of real-world problems. Researchers, futurists, and tech CEOs all began buzzing about the massive potential of the field to decipher human speech, translate documents, recognize images, predict consumer behavior, identify fraud, make lending decisions, help robots see, and even drive a car. Pulling back the curtain on deep learning. So, how does deep learning do this? Fundamentally, these algorithms use massive amounts of data from a specific domain to make a decision that optimizes for a desired outcome. It does this by training itself to recognize deeply buried patterns and correlations connecting the many data points to the desired outcome. This pattern-finding process is easier when the data is labeled with that desired outcome. Cat versus no cat, clicked versus didn't click, won game versus lost game. It can then draw on its extensive knowledge of these correlations, many of which are invisible or irrelevant to human observers, to make better decisions than a human could. Doing this requires massive amounts of relevant data, a strong algorithm, a narrow domain, and a concrete goal. If you're short any one of these, things fall apart. Too little data? The algorithm doesn't have enough examples to uncover meaningful correlations. Too broad a goal? The algorithm lacks clear benchmarks to shoot for in optimization. Deep learning is what's known as narrow AI, intelligence that takes data from one specific domain and applies it to optimizing one specific outcome. While impressive, it is still a far cry from general AI, the all-purpose technology that can do everything a human can. Deep learning's most natural application is in fields like insurance and making loans. Relevant data on borrowers is abundant. Credit score, income, recent credit card usage, and the goal to optimize for is clear. Minimize default rates. Taken one step further, deep learning will power self-driving cars by helping them to see the world around them. Recognize patterns in the camera's pixels, red octagons. Figure out what they correlate to, stop signs, and use that information to make decisions. Apply pressure to the brake to slowly stop that optimize for your desired outcome. Deliver me safely home in minimal time. People are so excited about deep learning precisely because its core power, its ability to recognize a pattern, optimize for a specific outcome, make a decision, can be applied to so many different kinds of everyday problems. That's why companies like Google and Facebook have scrambled to snap up the small core of deep learning experts, paying them millions of dollars to pursue ambitious research projects. In 2013, Google acquired the startup founded by Geoffrey Hinton, and the following year scooped up British AI startup DeepMind, the company that went on to build AlphaGo, for over $500 million. The results of these projects have continued to awe observers and grab headlines. They've shifted the cultural zeitgeist and given us a sense that we stand at the precipice of a new era, one in which machines will radically empower and or violently displace human beings. AI and international research. But where was China in all this? The truth is, the story of the birth of deep learning took place almost entirely in the United States, Canada, and the United Kingdom. After that, a smaller number of Chinese entrepreneurs and venture capital funds like my own began to invest in this area. But the great majority of China's technology community didn't properly wake up to the deep learning revolution until its Sputnik moment in 2016, a full decade behind the field's breakthrough academic paper, and 4 years after it proved itself in the computer vision competition. American universities and technology companies have for decades reaped the rewards of the country's ability to attract and absorb talent from around the globe. Progress in AI appeared to be no different. The United States looked to be out to a commanding lead, one that would only grow as these elite researchers leveraged Silicon Valley's generous funding environment, unique culture, and powerhouse companies. In the eyes of most analysts, China's technology industry was destined to play the same role in global AI that it had for decades, that of the copycat who lagged far behind the cutting edge. As I demonstrate in the following chapters, that analysis is wrong. It is based on outdated assumptions about the Chinese technology environment, as well as a more fundamental misunderstanding of what is driving the ongoing AI revolution. The West may have sparked the fire of deep learning, but China will be the biggest beneficiary of the heat the AI fire is generating. That global shift is the product of two transitions, from the age of discovery to the age of implementation, and from the age of expertise to the age of data. Core to the mistaken belief that the United States holds a major edge in its AI is the impression that we are living in an age of discovery, a time in which elite AI researchers are constantly breaking down old paradigms and finally cracking long-standing mysteries. This impression has been fed by a constant stream of breathless media reports announcing the latest feat performed by AI. Diagnosing certain cancers better than doctors. Beating human champions at the bluff-heavy game of Texas Hold'em. Teaching itself how to master new skills with zero human interference. Given this flood of media attention to each new achievement, the casual observer, or even expert analyst, would be forgiven for believing that we are consistently breaking fundamentally new ground in artificial intelligence research. I believe this impression is misleading. Many of these new milestones are rather merely the application of the past decade's breakthroughs, primarily deep learning, but also complementary technologies like reinforcement learning and transfer learning, to new problems. What these researchers are doing requires great skill and deep knowledge, the ability to tweak complex mathematical algorithms, to manipulate massive amounts of data, to adapt neural networks to different problems. That often takes PhD-level expertise in these fields. But these advances are incremental improvements and optimizations that leverage the dramatic leap forward of deep learning. The age of implementation. What they really represent is the application of deep learning's incredible powers of pattern recognition and prediction to different spheres, such as diagnosing a disease, issuing an insurance policy, driving a car, or translating a Chinese sentence into readable English. They do not signify rapid progress toward general AI or any other similar breakthrough on the level of deep learning. This is the age of implementation, and the companies that cash in on this time period will need talented entrepreneurs, engineers, and product managers. Deep learning pioneer Andrew Ng has compared AI to Thomas Edison's harnessing of electricity, a breakthrough technology on its own, and one that once harnessed can be applied to revolutionizing dozens of different industries. Just as 19th century entrepreneurs soon began applying the electricity breakthrough to cooking food, lighting rooms, and powering industrial equipment, today's AI entrepreneurs are doing the same with deep learning. Much of the difficult but abstract work of AI research has been done, and it's now time for entrepreneurs to roll up their sleeves and get down to the dirty work of turning algorithms into sustainable businesses. That in no way diminishes the current excitement around AI. Implementation is what makes academic advances meaningful and what will truly end up changing the fabric of our daily lives. The age of implementation means we will finally see real-world applications after decades of promising research, something I've been looking forward to for much of my adult life. But making that distinction between discovery and implementation is core to understanding how AI will shape our lives and what or which country will primarily drive that progress. During the age of discovery, progress was driven by a handful of elite thinkers, virtually all of whom were clustered in the United States and Canada. Their research insights and unique intellectual innovations led to a sudden and monumental ramping up of what computers can do. Since the dawn of deep learning, no other group of researchers or engineers has come up with innovations on that scale. The age of data. This brings us to the second major transition, from the age of expertise to the age of data. Today, successful AI algorithms need three things: big data, computing power, and the work of strong, but not necessarily elite, AI algorithm engineers. Bringing the power of deep learning to bear on new problems requires all three. But in this age of implementation, data is the core. That's because, once computing power and engineering talent reach a certain threshold, the quantity of data becomes decisive in determining the overall power and accuracy of an algorithm. In deep learning, there's no data like more data. The more examples of a given phenomenon a network is exposed to, the more accurately it can pick out patterns and identify things in the real world. Given much more data, an algorithm designed by a handful of mid-level AI engineers usually outperforms one designed by a world-class deep learning researcher. Having a monopoly on the best and the brightest just isn't what it used to be. Elite AI researchers still have the potential to push the field to the next level, but those advances have occurred once every several decades. While we wait for the next breakthrough, the burgeoning availability of data will be the driving force behind deep learning's disruption of countless industries around the world. Advantage China. Realizing the newfound promise of electrification a century ago required four key inputs: fossil fuels to generate it, entrepreneurs to build new businesses around it, electrical engineers to manipulate it, and a supportive government to develop the underlying public infrastructure. Harnessing the power of AI today, the electricity of the 21st century, requires four analogous inputs: abundant data, hungry entrepreneurs, AI scientists, and an AI-friendly policy environment. By looking at the relative strengths of China and the United States in these four categories, we can predict the emerging balance of power in the AI world order. Both of the transitions described on the previous pages, from discovery to implementation and from expertise to data, now tilt the playing field toward China. They do this by minimizing China's weaknesses and amplifying its strengths. Moving from discovery to implementation reduces one of China's greatest weak points, outside-the-box approaches to research questions, and also leverages the country's most significant strength, scrappy entrepreneurs with sharp instincts for building robust businesses. The transition from expertise to data has a similar benefit, downplaying the importance of the globally elite researchers that China lacks, and maximizing the value of another key resource that China has in abundance: data. Silicon Valley's entrepreneurs have earned a reputation as some of the hardest working in America, passionate young founders who pull all-nighters in a mad dash to get a product out, and then obsessively iterate that product while seeking out the next big thing. Entrepreneurs there do indeed work hard. But I've spent decades deeply embedded in both Silicon Valley and China's tech scene, working at Apple, Microsoft, and Google before incubating and investing in dozens of Chinese startups. I can tell you that Silicon Valley looks downright sluggish compared to its competitor across the Pacific. China's successful internet entrepreneurs have risen to where they are by conquering the most cutthroat competitive environment on the planet. They live in a world where speed is essential, copying is an accepted practice, and competitors will stop at nothing to win a new market. Every day spent in China's startup scene is a trial by fire, like a day spent as a gladiator in the Colosseum. The battles are life or death, and your opponents have no scruples. The only way to survive this battle is to constantly improve one's product, but also to innovate on your business model and build a moat around your company. If one's only edge is a single novel idea, that idea will invariably be copied. Your key employees will be poached, and you'll be driven out of business by VC-subsidized competitors. This rough-and-tumble environment makes a strong contrast to Silicon Valley, where copying is stigmatized and many companies are allowed to coast on the basis of one original idea or lucky break. That lack of competition can lead to a certain level of complacency, with entrepreneurs failing to explore all the possible iterations of their first innovation. The messy markets and dirty tricks of China's copycat era produced some questionable companies, but they also incubated a generation of the world's most nimble, savvy, and nose-to-the-grindstone entrepreneurs. These entrepreneurs will be the secret sauce that helps China become the first country to cash in on AI's age of implementation. These entrepreneurs will have access to the other natural resource of China's tech world: an overabundance of data. China has already surpassed the United States in terms of sheer volume as the number one producer of data. That data is not just impressive in quantity, But thanks to China's unique technology ecosystem, an alternate universe of products and functions not seen anywhere else, that data is tailor-made for building profitable AI companies. Until about 5 years ago, it made sense to directly compare the progress of Chinese and U.S. internet companies as one would describe a race. They were on roughly parallel tracks, and the United States was slightly ahead of China. But around 2013, China's internet took a right turn. Rather than following in the footsteps or outright copying of American companies, Chinese entrepreneurs began developing products and services with simply no analog in Silicon Valley. Analysts describing China used to invoke simple Silicon Valley-based analogies when describing Chinese companies. The Facebook of China, the Twitter of China. But in the last few years, in many cases, these labels stopped making sense. The Chinese internet had morphed into an alternate universe. Chinese urbanites began paying for real-world purchases with barcodes on their phones, part of a mobile payments revolution unseen anywhere else. Armies of food delivery men and on-demand masseuses riding electronic scooters clogged the streets of Chinese cities. They represented a tidal wave of online-to-offline, O2O, startups that brought the convenience of e-commerce to bear on real-world services like restaurant food or manicures. Soon after that came the millions of brightly colored shared bikes that users could pick up or lock up anywhere just by scanning a barcode with their phones. Tying all these services together was the rise of China's super app WeChat, a kind of digital Swiss Army knife for modern life. WeChat users began sending text and voice messages to friends, paying for groceries, booking doctor's appointments, filing taxes, unlocking shared bikes, and buying plane tickets, all without ever leaving the app. WeChat became the universal social app, one in which different types of group chats, formed with coworkers and friends or around interests, were used to negotiate business deals, organize birthday parties, or discuss modern art. It brought together a grab bag of essential functions that are scattered across a dozen apps in the United States and elsewhere. China's alternate digital universe now creates and captures oceans of new data about the real world. That wealth of information on users, their location every second of the day, how they commute, what foods they like, when and where they buy groceries and beer, will prove invaluable in the era of AI implementation. It gives these companies a detailed treasure trove of these users' daily habits, one that can be combined with deep learning algorithms to offer tailor-made services ranging from financial auditing to city planning. It also vastly outstrips what Silicon Valley's leading companies can decipher from your searches, likes, or occasional online purchases. This unparalleled trove of real-world data will give Chinese companies a major leg up in developing AI-driven services. The hand on the scales. These recent and powerful developments naturally tilt the balance of power in China's direction. But on top of this natural rebalancing, China's government is also doing everything it can to tip the scales. The Chinese government's sweeping plan for becoming an AI superpower pledged widespread support and funding for AI research, but most of all, it acted as a beacon to local governments throughout the country to follow suit. Chinese government structures are more complex than most Americans assume. The central government does not simply issue commands that are instantly implemented throughout the nation. But it does have the ability to pick out certain long-term goals and mobilize epic resources to push in that direction. The country's lightning-paced development of a sprawling high-speed rail network serves as a living example. Local government leaders responded to the AI surge as though they had just heard the starting pistol for a race, fully competing with each other to lure AI companies and entrepreneurs to their regions, with generous promises of subsidies and preferential policies. That race is just getting started, and exactly how much impact it will have on China's AI development is still unclear. But whatever the outcome, it stands in sharp contrast to a U.S. government that deliberately takes a hands-off approach to entrepreneurship and is actively slashing funding for basic research. Putting all these pieces together, the dual transitions into the age of implementation and the age of data, China's world-class entrepreneurs and proactive government, I believe that China will soon match or even overtake the United States in developing and deploying artificial intelligence. In my view, that lead in AI deployment will translate into productivity gains on a scale not seen since the Industrial Revolution. PricewaterhouseCoopers estimates AI deployment will add $15.7 trillion to global GDP by 2030. China is predicted to take home $7 trillion of that total, nearly double North America's $3.7 trillion in gains. As the economic balance of power tilts in China's favor, so too will political influence and soft power, the country's cultural and ideological footprint around the globe. This new AI world order will be particularly jolting to Americans who have grown accustomed to a near-total dominance of the technological sphere. For as far back as many of us can remember, it was American technology companies that were pushing their products and their values on users around the globe. As a result, American companies, citizens, and politicians have forgotten what it feels like to be on the receiving end of these exchanges. A process that often feels akin to technological colonization. China does not intend to use its advantage in the AI era as a platform for such colonization, but AI-induced disruptions to the political and economic order will lead to a major shift in how all countries experience the phenomenon of digital globalization. The real crises. Significant as this jockeying between the world's two superpowers will be, it pales in comparison to the problems of job losses and growing inequality, both domestically and between countries, that AI will conjure. As deep learning washes over the global economy, it will indeed wipe out billions of jobs up and down the economic ladder. Accountants, assembly line workers, warehouse operators, stock analysts, quality control inspectors, truckers, paralegals, and even radiologists, just to name a few. Human civilization has in the past absorbed similar technology-driven shocks to the economy, turning hundreds of millions of farmers into factory workers over the 19th and 20th centuries. But none of these changes ever arrived as quickly as AI. Based on the current trends in technology advancement and adoption, I predict that within 15 years, artificial intelligence will technically be able to replace around 40 to 50% of jobs in the United States. Actual job losses may end up lagging those technical capabilities by an additional decade, but I forecast that the disruption to job markets will be very real, very large, and coming soon. Rising in tandem with unemployment will be astronomical wealth in the hands of the new AI tycoons. Uber is already one of the most valuable startups in the world, even while giving around 75% of the money earned from each ride to the driver. To that end, how valuable would Uber become if in the span of a couple of years, the company was able to replace every single human driver with an AI-powered self-driving car? Or if banks could replace all their mortgage lenders with algorithms that issued smarter loans with much lower default rates, all without human interference. Similar transformations will soon play out across industries like trucking, insurance, manufacturing, and retail. Further concentrating those profits is the fact that AI naturally trends toward winner-take-all economics within an industry. Deep learning's relationship with data fosters a virtuous circle for strengthening the best products and companies. More data lends to better products, which in turn attract more users who generate more data that further improves the product. That combination of data and cash also attracts the top AI talent to the top companies, widening the gap between industry leaders and laggards. In the past, the dominance of physical goods and limits of geography helped rein in consumer monopolies. U.S. antitrust laws didn't hurt either. But going forward, digital goods and services will continue eating up larger shares of the consumer pie, And autonomous trucks and drones will dramatically slash the cost of shipping physical goods. Instead of a dispersion of industry profits across different companies and regions, we will begin to see greater and greater concentration of these astronomical sums in the hands of a few, all while unemployment lines grow longer. The AI World Order. Inequality will not be contained within national borders. China and the United States have already jumped out to an enormous lead over all other countries in artificial intelligence, setting the stage for a new kind of bipolar world order. Several other countries, the United Kingdom, France, and Canada, to name a few, have strong AI research labs staffed with great talent, but they lack the venture capital ecosystem and large user bases to generate the data that will be key to the age of implementation. As AI companies in the United States and China accumulate more data and talent, the virtuous cycle of data-driven improvements is widening their lead to a point where it will become insurmountable. China and the United States are currently incubating the AI giants that will dominate global markets and extract wealth from consumers around the globe. At the same time, AI-driven automation in factories will undercut the one economic advantage developing countries historically possessed: cheap labor. Robot-operated factories will likely relocate to be closer to their customers in large markets, pulling away the ladder that developing countries like China and the Asian tigers of South Korea and Singapore climbed up on their way to becoming high-income, technology-driven economies. The gap between the global haves and have-nots will widen with no known path toward closing it. The AI world order will combine winner-take-all economics with an unprecedented concentration of wealth in the hands of a few companies in China and the United States. This, I believe, is the real underlying threat posed by artificial intelligence. Tremendous social disorder and political collapse stemming from widespread unemployment and gaping inequality. Tumult in job markets and turmoil across societies will occur against the backdrop of a far more personal and human crisis, a psychological loss of one's purpose. For centuries, human beings have filled their days by working, trading their time and sweat for shelter and food. We've built deeply entrenched cultural values around this exchange, and many of us have been conditioned to derive our sense of self-worth from the act of daily work. The rise of artificial intelligence will challenge these values and threatens to undercut that sense of life purpose in a vanishingly short window of time. These challenges are momentous, but not insurmountable. In recent years, I myself faced a mortal threat and crisis of purpose in my own personal life. That experience transformed me and opened my eyes to potential solutions to the AI-induced jobs crisis I foresee. Tackling these problems will require a combination of clear-eyed analysis and profound philosophical examination of what matters in our lives, a task for both our minds and our hearts. In the closing chapters of this book, I outline my own vision for a world in which humans not only coexist alongside AI, but thrive with it. Getting ourselves there, on a technological, social, and human level, requires that we first understand how we arrived here. To do that, we must look back 15 years to a time when China was derided as a land of copycat companies and Silicon Valley stood proud and alone on the technological cutting edge. 2. Copycats in the Colosseum. They called him the cloner. Wang Xing made his mark on the early Chinese internet as a serial copycat, a bizarre mirror image of the revered serial entrepreneurs of Silicon Valley. In 2003, 2005, 2007, and again in 2010, Wang took America's hottest startup of the year and copied it for Chinese users. It all began when he stumbled on the pioneering social network Friendster while pursuing an engineering PhD at the University of Delaware. The concept of a virtual network of friendships instantly clicked with Wang's background in computer networking, and he dropped out of his doctoral program to return to China to recreate Friendster. On his first project, he chose not to clone Friendster's exact design. Rather, he and a couple of friends just took the core concept of the digital social network and built their own user interface around it. The result was, in Wang's words, ugly, and the site failed to take off. 2 years later, Facebook was storming college campuses with its clean design and niche targeting of students. Wang adopted